variance, specifically the 5,000 square foot site trigger, which it applies in pockets around the city, but also more broadly, the exemptions for commercial and industrial lands, which if you look at a map, and David Diaz from the Urban Forestry Commission developed a map, it's quite striking the extent of the city that we're leaving out of this citywide tree code. And these are areas that are particularly important to combating Portland's serious urban heat island problem, important to critical health and important to public health. And they also tend to fall in areas, to extent industrial commercial, a lot of industrial land is closer to lower income neighborhoods, like on the Columbia Corridor in East Portland. There's important, it's important to address trees in those areas to achieve the equitable health outcomes that are a high priority for the city. The other area is in the public right-of-way. We've heard a lot about the importance of the concerns about large, healthy trees in private development situations. We also heard about problems with large, healthy trees in the public right-of-way, and both them being removed and the need to grow them there. So the committee recommended kind of a big look, intramural, unified big look at addressing trees in the public right-of-way, how we can preserve large, healthy trees there, and how we can help grow more there. It's clear there's significant and unavoidable conflicts between street improvements and tree preservation and planning, and we need more leadership, innovation, collaboration in the bureaus to address those these conflicts. We need to make the innovative tree-friendly designs and technologies for these for sidewalks, for example, the default, not something that we have to kind of neighbors have to fight for. Cully residents pointed out to us that in their neighborhood, 75% of large trees, trees over 24 inches diameter, are in or near unimproved streets, which make up 60% of all the streets in the neighborhood. And you have similar situations like this in throughout East Portland, even in Southwest Portland, too. So I think there's lots of solutions here that there would be lots of support in the community, but we need to address those, and we need to address them soon. I think we should start in, for example, in the mixed-use zone project, which I think we were all surprised to hear really wasn't dealing with street trees in the public right-of-way next to some of these areas that are, you know, the corridors, main commercial corridors, where we want envision these places as livable, vibrant places. So lastly, I'll just point out that in 2007, the data indicate that the city's falling the farthest short in achieving its tree canopy targets in two areas, commercial industrial land and in the public right-of-way, where we're only about 50% of the targets for those particular areas. While Title 11 is expected to only be one tool to achieve these targets, it's a big concern that Title 11 exempts or is really kind of the weakest in these very areas. So I hope that kind of lays the need to put some focus in both these areas going forward. Thank you very much for the opportunity to serve on the committee and to report to you today. And we look forward to being involved in the next steps.
Thank you.
Thank you for all of your service.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have some other invited testimony?
No, that's it. And I understand that staff wants us to take testimony on the report first, and then we move it to continue it for 4 weeks.
All right. Then let's do that, please. Who's signed up?
For 314, I have five people signed up. Okay, four people. Jim Katuzin, Joe Petrina, and Sarah Long.
Okay, come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. So let me just pull up my...
Just give us your name for the record, please.
Excuse me for 1 second.
I'll introduce myself. I'm Jim Kitchen, general contractor. Thanks for having us. A lot of work that's gone into this. We are general contractors. We are specializing in renovation and remodeling industry. And this is specific to the report, just in the remodeling context. We've both belonged to the Oregon Remodelers Association and the Home Builders Association, and I know the home builders have not been participating in this process, unfortunately, and we've been a little bit absent as well. We've all been very busy since the recession. So what we've seen, it's been a we understand the health and vitality of the urban canopy and trees in Portland and contributing to the livability. What's been frustrating is the consequences of these the new tree code regulations. It's been difficult. People have been frustrated. There's been an educational process. They don't understand the fees involved, the level of protection that we had to go to. My comment would be that the regulations are not clear and consistent and easy to implement. I think there's, still a learning curve, and we've had frustration expressed by our building inspectors. They've spent some time presenting to us at some of our membership meetings. Our clients are frustrated and angry. I even had a retired building official that was very angry about the requirements for the tree code. Want to say anything, Joe?
Yeah, so let me introduce myself. My name is Joe Petrina. I'm a remodeling contractor. I've been in business in the city of Portland for 35 years. I've also was born and raised in the city of Portland, and I live presently in Laurelhurst. As a remodeling contractor, I come to you to suggest improving the existing tree code to serve both the urban forest as well as residents in the city. I believe the spirit of this code, however, I believe the present code has some unintended consequences to the remodeling industry and to landscape contractors. I'm presently a member of the Oregon Remodelers Association, as well as a member of the Home Builders Association, which are two professional associations that represent the building community. I believe in the spirit of the new code, so I'm not here to protest the fact that we have a new code. I think it's great. And as Jim said, we feel like there might be a few things that might be able to be tweaked in order to maybe make the code a little bit more affordable, but still live by that spirit. At my house in Portland, I have a large canopy. In my backyard, I have a 100-foot pin oak. I had another 100-foot pin oak, and unfortunately, it tried to save it for 5 years and was was unable to do. I have two sweet gums in the front yard that are 80 feet tall. I have two smaller dogwoods. I have two 40-foot red leaf maples. So I do like trees, and I think we all do. However, I also have to say that I believe that trees beautify the city. That's how they help with our rain runoff. How they help improve the value of our property, our neighborhood, and our city as a whole. However, I am not in favor of some of the existing or the present restrictions. I have come to the council to express my concern of expensive procedures that are, in my mind, unnecessary measures for the code currently that are enforced. Speaking to the building community, to the city inspectors, city planners, and city building officials, I have come prepared to make four proposed changes for the remodeling projects. The four proposed changes would change the code with regard of how to protect the trees. The first proposed change I have emailed all of you this information, so you have it. The first change that I would recommend is that right now the code is enforcing us to put 6-foot chain link fence, which I'm sure you're all aware of, around a tree. And sometimes it gets to the point where it's such a distance around the tree that it's almost impossible or difficult to even do the building. There's projects where, the tree has a canopy of, 20 feet, 25 feet, and you're trying to, put a driveway next to it. Well, it's legal to do it. It's just difficult to do it because the actual protections in the way. Okay, I'm sorry. Well,
why don't you lay out your amendments?
This is, in a sense, giving us four amendments.
amendments, and I'd like to...
He has emailed them to
okay.
us.
Okay.
But I'd like to hear them from him, okay. if I could. He's taking
thank
the time.
You, Amanda, or thank you. Okay, so I will try and pick up the pace. So my suggestion for the, instead of putting up a chain link fence, my suggestion, and we've talked to the members of the Oregon Remodelers Association, instead of using chain link fence, why can't we use like the orange, you know, there's a 4-foot orange caution fence that an average contractor can purchase relatively inexpensively. They can keep it in their shop. They can use it. It's still a means of protecting that tree. It's just not as expensive.
Talking about the plastic net.
That's right, kind of with metal posts. Yeah. And it would be a 4-foot high fence. And, you know, most contractors can afford just to keep it.
It probably doesn't rust. What are your other three, sir?
Okay. Second proposal was that we think there should be several things that are exempt. And one of the proposals is hand-dug footings and foundations. Sometimes, you know, there's deck builders. And I don't really build decks. I do more major remodels and... But there's deck builders, you know, say they're going to build a $2,000 deck, and they're building the deck in the back of the, in the backyard, and there's a tree in the front yard on the opposite end of the house that falls under protection. But that, by code, the deck builder needs to protect the tree. So he has to spend $500 or whatever it costs to rent it, to buy it, to assemble it, to dismantle it, and take it back. For a small project, it seems like that should be exempt. And then also, I think that, and we believe that small additions for less than 200 square feet, which was, I think it was originally proposed for that to be exempt, and then somehow it fell off the map. Two other items for exemption would be hand-dug wells, window wells, you know, for egress, and any other related items that would not affect the tree roots.
So what low impact excavation method?
That's correct. Right? And I feel like this would save the homeowner unnecessary expenses but still live by the spirit of the tree code. Third proposal. Let me try and sum this up. So that trees that are located on a building site in a remodel should only be protected if it's a specific distance away from the work or if it's in the path of the construction, which I just explained to you about. And there's, I had a job recently where we were putting a front porch on this house and we're doing a kitchen remodel. There was a huge tree on the very back of the property. There was a fence between us and that back tree. And there wasn't any work being done in the back, but by code, we're supposed to protect that tree in the backyard. And the owner said, I can't believe it. I just can't believe that we have to put tree protection and spend $500 for a tree in the backyard where it has no effect. Or another thing is like I have a job that I'm looking at now where we're putting a driveway in or the driveway's there and putting a new garage in where an existing garage was. There's a tree on the opposite side of the property, on the front of the house. You would never come close to it. So we're just wondering why do we have to put tree protection for areas like that? So those are that would be my third proposal. And my last proposal, which is pretty simple, is this is the code right now. It's a 95-page document for the existing tree codes. And what we're suggesting from the homeowners or the Home Builders Association and the Oregon Remodelers Association is that we could simplify the tree ordinance so that we can have a trifold, which the city of Portland has a dozen of these for attic conversions, for staircases, for dormers, for basement remodels. So why can't we take this and put it in this? So
okay. It's really hard to do.
It may be hard to do, but it should. We need to simplify it so the average homeowner, for the guy working out of the back of his truck that's a small landscape contractor and has no clue what's being discussed and may not follow the news, may not read the news, may not find about it until he has a violation. And we don't want people like that to get harmed. And we're also trying to save money for, to homeowners so that they're not paying unintended expenses. So, I just wanted to say, I've talked to a lot of professionals, and they're saying that this code is probably one of the more difficult codes to implement because it's expensive. And I've talked to people that are city inspectors, contractors, homeowners, and the bottom line is it's coming down to the homeowner's expenses. And it's not that I don't want to protect trees, but we want to do it in a reasonable fashion. So I truly believe in the spirit of the code, and I think there are several unintended consequences, and we would appreciate the council's consideration in this matter.
Thank you very much.
All right, just closing, kind of summarize. So I think there's a distinction between remodeling and site redevelopment. I don't know if this code addresses that adequately. And then we're going to continue to participate in whatever levels we can still participate with the urban forestry people.
Thank you both
very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, who's next?
Sarah Long and Bob Solinger.
Afternoon.
Hello. Okay, so.
Just give us your name, Sarah.
Oh, Sarah. Sarah Long. Right. Okay. I'm waiting for the file that I just sent to Carla.
Oh, okay. Give her a second to route it to us here.
Okay, what that is a copy of an email. It's a photograph of a copy of an email that was sent from Luke Miller to Stephanie Beckman, who spoke earlier today, who is sitting next to Mike Abate right there. What was going on was the developer who owned the house that I lived in submitted a very falsified arborist report. And as you can see in this email here, Luke Miller was trying to bring light to that. He said this was far from the only time it had happened and that he was going to use it as an example. I never heard from Luke Miller again after I saw this email. He didn't send it to me. I got it from a public records request. In fact, I was never able to talk to Luke Miller again. And I'm kind of concerned about his career in urban forestry, given that he was trying to bring light to corruption within the Bureau. In the end, I actually had to go to Stephanie Beckman's supervisor because she would not listen to me on the fact that the arborist report had been falsified. And I finally got to her supervisor, who oversees a lot of people. She's extremely busy. And the supervisor, after months of Stephanie stonewalling, was finally able to force for this, you know, thing to take place. And he wrote this really scathing email, as you can see. At the end of this episode, All of the trees I tried to save were killed, except for one. I saved one, but two of them had never been fixed. They were never identified as the correct species, and my former landlord got out of paying $2,400. I have proof that they were the wrong species. I got another arborist report, but there's no enforcement written in that safeguards in situations of fraud. And so there's nothing that can be done in arrears about those trees that were killed wrongly. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you. Bob, come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Solinger. I'm the conservation director for Portland Audubon. This is Jed. His mom's sick today, so he got to come to council, so I apologize for the various noises from the back of the room.
Unneeded.
I'll be very brief today. I just want to, first of all, express Audubon's appreciation for the work done by this committee. I think they've done really good work. It's important work. But I also want to point out something that I think is really ironic. I pointed it out once before, but I'm going to keep pointing it out. And that is the fact that we're spending this incredible amount of time and money, and we should be, to protect our trees. The goal is to increase our urban canopy. And yet, we're also at the same time proposing to cut the Dutch Elm program, which would be the largest loss of trees, up to 3,000 trees, to save a couple hundred thousand dollars. And, you know, as we're doing all this work and putting all this code in and these inspections and saving, you know, one tree at a time and spending a lot of money doing it, we're talking about, for a very small amount of money, the biggest loss of big, beautiful trees, literally in decades. And I just don't understand how we get there.
Not really.
We are.
We have to propose that, but the city budget office is recommending against the cut, and I doubt very much whether the council will approve it.
Okay. Well, when I hear that confirmed, I'll be very happy to hear it. I will say that it's come up year in and year out. I think this is probably the fifth or sixth time I've testified against it. It came up every year I was on the Parks Board. And I really wish that we would stop doing these kinds of things, because it just takes a tremendous amount of resources. And we know that if we don't come in and testify, it does go through. You know, council doesn't hear. So what it requires us to do year in and year out is come back and testify like this and then get told, well, we weren't intending to do it in the first place. That's not good public process. It's not good public policy. I hope we can come up with a plan. And one of the things I would recommend for this plan, if we're really thinking holistically about trees, and we've recommended this for many years, is to get a plan for the Dutch elms. Let's put that in place. It should be in the central city plan. It should be in the tree plan, wherever it needs to live. But let's invest the time to think about how do we transition these thousands of trees, what makes sense over the next 50 or 60 years, because we probably don't want to spend money every single year on them. What we probably want to do is save some for the full 60 years, save some for a period of that, and then transition some out and sort of sequence it so we replace that canopy and save money as we do it, but we don't just lose them all in one fell swoop. And so I'd really encourage folks to add that to the plan going forward. I think it would save us a lot of time and angst every single year in the budget process, and would also be, you know, probably the most significant thing we could do to preserve our canopy, because it's going to save far more trees probably in the short run than what we're doing here. Both are important. So thank you. And again, apologize for all the noise from the back of the room.
No apologies.
I really appreciate you highlighting
this issue, both because it's an important issue and I agree with you, but also because I do think it's important for people to know the budget choices we're making, because as Commissioner Fritz said, the city budget office does not recommend that cut, but they recommended other cuts in parks. They recommended eliminating the police officers in the school program. That's the way they balance the budget. So I think that Commissioner Fritz is right that the Dutch Elm program is probably safe, but people out there need to know that these are the kind of tough choices that we're making.
And it's because we're dedicating millions of dollars to affordable housing. So, Council, we are supposed to be moving to the next item. But wait right there, Bob. In light of the fact that Bob is full-time parenting right now, I'm wondering if you would let him testify on the next one before we even hear the staff report on it so that you can
and Bob, can
full
I just,
attention to somebody who's
Bob, since
it.
You're next in queue, he can sit up here if he wants. Bob, the other thing I'll say about the 5% cut package is that I may be in a minority. I don't know what the views of all my colleagues are, but when Mayor Hales came in and did a modified zero-based budgeting at 95%, it created a lot of very uncomfortable conversations because it forced people to rank and prioritize and think about some things. We actually spun off some work. And we created new partnerships for some work in some bureaus, or we rethought where things should land. And the pushback we get is that each year we're having this painful conversation about identifying things. And if it wasn't the Dutch Elm cut, it would be a swimming pool. And people would come say, well, you're healthy Portland. How can you dare put a pool on? That's against your health mandate. Or anything. We're a maintenance cut. Well, how can you do that? Because you're supposed to be maintaining things. I still think, personally, that this exercise that the mayor initiated, we've done every other year, is a healthy one, even though I understand your frustration. And you and I both, and Commissioner Fritz was very clear during the budget that most of her proposed cuts were, what did you call them?
Against my recommendation.
Well, you called them what is not Empire State Buildings, but
Washington Monuments.
I said that there, everything in parks is a Washington Monument.
So she made it very clear that there was no cut that she was going to advocate for. But my personal view is that it's an exercise that every once in a while does bear fruit in a bureau, causing us to rethink something. But I take your point. Your point is also accurate, that it produces the anomaly of us doing a hearing like this and having a cut that is inconsistent. But almost every cut on the 5% cut packages is inconsistent with the core mission of the Bureau that's proposed it. So therein lies the dilemma.
Yeah. Sorry, it's a process. So
if we could move to the stopgap amendment, which we had testimony 2 weeks ago, and then was amendment to the amendment, if you'd like to testify on that, Bob. I know you've written a letter on behalf of Audubon.
No, I really appreciate that. And again, apologize. Jim's doing a wonderful job of parroting back there, though. So it's good to know that. So we did send a letter. We appreciate the intent behind Commissioner Saltzman's proposed additional amendment regarding affordable housing. Certainly no one wants to drive up the cost of affordable housing, but we think this is the wrong way to do it. We think we're trading one inequity against another, because the neighborhoods that are getting the most affordable housing are also the neighborhoods with the least trees. And I don't think we can pit one inequity against another. I think it's not a zero-sum game where the poorest neighborhoods can either have trees or sidewalks or clean water or healthy air. We have to do all of those things. And when we consider that, we need to compare it against the whole budget and where we spend money in other places. And I certainly come up with a lot of places that I think are better to cut than trading one inequity against another in a poor neighborhood. I've been asked by staff the question, well, how many trees is it? It might be only a few trees. And my answer to that is a couple things. First of all, if it's only a few trees, then the city can subsidize that mitigation, and that's our recommendation. Don't just put in the exception for affordable housing. Also, agree to mitigate for those trees that will be lost out of the city's fund if, in fact, we do need to do an exception for an affordable housing complex. And if it's only a few trees, you can afford to do that. And if it's a lot of trees, then you can't afford not to do that, because those are the neighborhoods that don't have very many trees. And when there were three big trees being cut down in East Moreland, that was so important that the mayor's office actually directly intervened and got involved, and I'm glad they did. But that's a neighborhood with a heck of a lot of trees, and the loss of those three trees means a heck of a lot less in that neighborhood than one big tree in, for example, my neighborhood, King neighborhood, where there are no big trees left. If you cut down the one tree that's there, it may be the one tree for blocks and blocks that's big. And so I really think when we do these kinds of things, we can't play this zero-sum game. If we're going to exempt affordable housing, let's also put in place, first of all, very strict standards to make sure that the exemption is really needed in this case, that there's no way to avoid cutting the tree, and that to me would be a site inspection. And two, I think the city should step up and create a fund, and it probably doesn't have to be very big, where they subsidize the replacement of those trees so we don't see the trees, neighborhoods with the least trees and the communities that need them the most lose the few trees they have left. And the Climate Change Action Plan, which I quoted directly in my letter, speaks very specifically to this. How are we going to deal with urban heat island in underserved neighborhoods? We're going to plant trees. Let's live up to that obligation. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks very much. Okay, let's move on into the rest of the list on the first item.
Yeah, as soon as we...
315?
I think we're done on the first. We've had all the first.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead then.
Charlie?
Yes.
So now we have to frame the second item.
Right.
I'm ready to offer my amendment. I didn't hear Carla read the item, but you read them both up front.
Now introduce and remind us of what we did 2 weeks ago, that this is a stopgap measure to try to stop the removal of very large trees. The proposal has a significant impact only on trees greater than 36 inches, which is a very small percentage of trees. And that by requiring inch-for-inch mitigation for above 36 inches, it will create a significant disincentive to remove these historic trees. And then if the developer chooses to remove them, then there is significant mitigation. And I understand that Commissioner Saltzman wishes to offer an amendment.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to first, this is a substitute amendment for the amendment that Commissioner Fish offered on my behalf 2 weeks ago when I was out sick. So I'd like to offer this as a substitute.
Second.
Could you read it, please, for everybody?
How about if I describe the intent? It's a long amendment. It's got a lot of words in it. It's fundamentally the same amendment. It will exempt the inch-by-inch diameter tree mitigation requirement for affordable housing projects that are approved for our system development charge waiver due to their affordable housing component. The substitute, or the subtle changes here between what was offered 2 weeks ago and today is that, one, this will prorate the exemption to the percentage of units that actually achieve the SDC waiver, and two, the housing director may craft administrative rules that can refine this process as real-world circumstances dictate. And I also want to point out that the amendment makes clear that the developer must demonstrate to the city that the proposed development cannot be situated on the lot to save the trees in question. And I'm confident that with the improved working relationship between the Bureau of Development Services and the Housing Bureau, that this requirement can be utilized to push hard on developers to save trees. So I want to thank everybody who's worked on this amendment over the last few weeks, and we'll take testimony, and hopefully we'll act on this amendment and on the package today.
I would like to have some council discussion since I wasn't involved in preparing this amendment. Could you tell us how you see the demonstration of the retention requirement? How will it happen?
I'd be happy to bring Matt Grum up from my office to explain.
Charlie?
Yeah. And okay, Commissioner Fish?
The normal procedure is to have it seconded, placed on the table, and then we can have discussion.
All right, so let's do that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I thought that had already been done.
Let's proceed to get it on the table. So is there a second for Dan Clement?
Okay. Yeah, there was a second.
Further discussion to accept the amendment and begin discussion? So let's accept the amendment, and then we'll move on into discussion. Yes.
Ritz?
I'll accept it for discussion. Aye.
Fish? Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hale?
Aye. Okay. Matt, please.
Yes, basically, my understanding is when a developer comes in and wants to use the SDC exemption program, they work with the Housing Bureau to apply for that. In those circumstances, the Housing Bureau will contact the Bureau of Development Services, work with them to say, hey, let's look at this developer's plot. We'll, if need be, we can send a housing tree inspector out to the lot to work with them to find out why they need to put the homes where they are. And if the inspectors feel that there's a way, we'll continue to work with them. And it's ultimately the Housing Bureau that approves whether that they're allowed to get the SDC exemption, is my understanding.
So the intent of the code, the tree, Title 11, is to streamline it so that there are fewer bureaus being involved. So the Housing Bureau will have tree inspectors?
No, these are the Bureau of Development Services, the inspectors that are co-located at the Bureau of Development Services.
But this says the director of the Housing Bureau is adopting the rules. Right?
If need be in the real world. Basically, as it works now, you have to go to the Housing Bureau to get your SDC exemption, and you also need to go to the Bureau of Development Services to get your permits and your tree, you know, obviously all your permits. They work together, and they basically meet now weekly to talk about affordable housing projects, and these can easily pop up in those meetings as, hey, we have a developer trying to get the SDC exemption as well as the tree exemption. Let's talk about this, and if we need to send an inspector out, we'll look at the site.
Matt, what do you make of the proposal that Bob Salinger raised about having the city possibly subsidize the mitigation?
Obviously, that's a policy call for the city council and the use of your resources.
Well, that's true. That's true. That is a policy call.
How long have you been doing this?
So the amendment assumes that the cost of removing the tree is less than the cost of mitigation. Is there any kind of weighing? Some of these large trees are expensive to remove. Mm. Is there any, under your proposal, how would you evaluate whether it's actually more expensive to remove the tree than to save it?
I guess I don't quite understand. That would be, I guess, the determination of the developer, not the city, of the cost.
But if the basis of the amendment is to save the applicant money.
The applicant doesn't have to pay the inch-for-inch mitigation. They still have to pay the $1,200 fee that we normally have under the amendment. They just don't have to pay the inch-for-inch mitigation fee.
$1,200 for a 50-inch tree.
As it is now under current code.
I'm sure we'll have citizens who want to testify on this, and then I would like to return to discussion after that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Matt. So let's go ahead and take testimony then on the second item, which is the regulatory changes.
I show eight more people. Okay. Michael Withy, Mark Bello, and Justin Wood.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon. Mike Withy with Micro Community Concepts. Although we've only designed a couple small communities in Portland, we've been able to design around them. Whenever we design something, we bring in landscapers, plant biologists, and architects. So the 151st and Stark project, we saved an old growth tree, hazelnut trees. We even saved the grapes that were existing there. So we believe it can be done with a little ingenuity. I'm very excited that you guys are willing to let folks that are building low-income housing get some exemptions, and that the city may work with us on that. There is one problem that I see, and I think that Jill Petrina made a good point of it. I live across the street from Matt Safina, the Safinas, and they have a garage that's falling down. So they need to fix this garage. But in order to do that, they had to spend $7,000 to be able to just scope it out, get the, not even before the permit process actually happened. And part of that was $700 so that they could surround a fence, even though it's 50 feet away from the project. So I think that so there's some things that need to be straightened out about this, but I think for the most part, it looks pretty good. I'm very impressed with the work that's been done so far, and I really don't have anything negative to say other than we can bring down the cost for the developers and the builders and the homeowners, and that's one of the way to do that. One way to do that is to not make people fence things that really don't need to be fenced.
In terms of the stopgap of Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, though, you're in favor of not requiring trees to be preserved on affordable housing sites?
I think that when you build affordable housing, it's extremely hard to get anybody to build affordable housing anyway. I think you know that. Unless, of course, it's financed by the city for the most part, whether it's through our own sort of inclusionary zoning non-rules or not. It's very hard to build affordable housing affordably. And so anything that you can do to mitigate those costs, whether it's replacing sidewalks, trees at the sidewalks, or any other thing that you can do to make it more affordable for developers to come in and build affordable housing, yeah, I think it's a good idea. And if the city can help pay to bring new trees in, then yeah.
That's not what's being proposed.
Mitigate. Cutting the trees down and then replacing them, mitigating the cost.
What's being proposed under Commissioner Saltzman's amendment is not doing the mitigation, just a $1,200 fee.
Oh.
Okay, let's move. Mark, go ahead.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Mark Bello. I live at 2146 Northeast 9th Avenue. I am the new chair of the Urban Forestry Commission. I was also on the Oversight Advisory Committee. And it's been quite a task this last year. As you know, thank you for passing that out.
What was more challenging, leading a distinguished unit of public employees or chairing the Urban Forestry Commission?
The union is easier because union employees like to shout at each other, and it's okay. Okay. We wrote before urging you to pass the emergency tree ordinance, and we were delighted. I will not repeat the kudos from Chris or Carrie about that hearing, how well that went. And we saw the amendment from Commissioner Saltzman, and we felt we need to do due diligence and looked at some alternative approach. And now I have a substitute ordinance, which raises one last issue and perhaps another way of helping. So first of all, I was very concerned. It's not in the letter, but Trillium Court was raised to you as a reason why we need to exempt affordable housing from the SDC charges, or that we need to have no policy, unlike the proposal from the Audubon Society. I looked at what we gained and lost in that project. That project, just very quickly, was 18,000 square feet. 4,000 square feet was in an environmental zone. There were three trees on site, a Doug fir 48 inches, a Doug fir 58 inches, and a Sequoia 66 inches. I tried to figure out how much we lost by allowing the Doug firs to be cut, because those trees, once they're cut, they no longer provide the benefits. Just to keep it simple, I looked at stormwater. I went to the iTree software, the national software base. Those trees are so large, they fall off the chart. So just extrapolating, it looks to me like every year, those trees prevent 15,000 gallons of water flowing off-site. Over 10 years, that's 1 million gallons. Over the 20 years it would take for the replacement trees, that's, 2 million gallons. The trees, because it was an environmental zone, the trees proposed will perhaps stop 1,000 gallons a year at beginning, and they will ramp up. So what we gained was we gained 7 affordable housing units. What we lost was 2 million gallons of stormwater and all the other issues. So finally, looking at the site plan, trees are cut not for building square footage but for a surface parking lot. So that's why we thought we need to have perhaps a look at these, because in some cases a large multi-dwelling project with many affordable housing units, you just can't have both. You can't save the trees and have the housing. It's clear. And we have a housing affordability crisis. But in low density or in some of these low unit affordable projects, it's extremely important that we have that look, which is what we tried to craft in our amendment. Let me just finish by saying the new amendment, really, I feel the devil's in the details. The new SDC rules could require, as Matt alluded to, something very much along the lines of a competent city official having a quick discussion. So I do feel that there's a workable solution. I just am concerned that the council not feel compelled to, A, underestimate what we're losing by cutting these trees, and, B, thinking that it's trees versus affordable housing. I think that would be a big mistake. I think like a design zone, like an environmental zone, if you have big enough trees, it really is worth it to have that conversation. Finally, it's $150 for current, when I was a planner, it was $150 for a 1 hour discussion. It could be $300, or there could be an early assistance appointment. But I think as part of this, we could ask the housing providers to meet with the city and talk about what's on site and what can be saved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, that's what my amendment requires.
Did the Open Forestry Commission send this to council and to Commissioner Novick? Salzman?
Our letter, yes.
Commissioner Salzman, did you consider this amendment?
Yes, we did, and we thought it was a little bit more onerous and expensive for developers of affordable housing, and it could result in them not being able to build the affordable housing that is so necessary. We're very glib about saying nobody favors trade-offs, but, reality requires some trade-offs. And right now we lack 34,000 units of affordable housing in this city. And so I'm trying to strike a compromise here that will allow affordable housing to be constructed without gumming up the works so much that people throw up their hands and say, forget it.
How many affordable housing units are we expecting on single-family lots?
This applies to multifamily as well, but... I don't have that number.
Yeah, this isn't just single family lots. Okay, let's go ahead. I've got some questions, but go ahead, Justin.
Good afternoon. My name is Justin Wood. I am an infill home builder. I also was on the original Title 11 tree code work group, and was one of the original members of the tree oversight committee. I do support the original proposal that's in front of you. I'm going to call it the Fritz Salzman proposal, which. Place trees in development situations at a 48-inch threshold. However, I'm here today to ask you to not support the amendment lowering that threshold to 36 inches. Both the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, BDS, and the original, when the Tree Oversight Committee originally heard the ask from council was to figure out a way to preserve large trees in development situations, and every amount of discussion and data and statistics that we looked at dealt with trees in the 48 to 50-inch threshold. I had communications with several of you, including Commissioner Fritz at one point when it was mentioned that we weren't talking about a great number of trees at trees larger than 48 inches. And that is, I do believe that to be correct. I don't think we're talking about a huge number of trees that would be adversely impacted, and I think it's a good way to save large trees. However, I think the amount of trees that are going to be affected by this at 36 inches is a huge number. Just in the last couple weeks alone, I have gone out and looked at sites that have quite a large number of trees in the 36 to 40 inch range. And a lot of times the single one, two lot houses we build on are not big enough to design around the trees. I'd use an example that if one of you were to offer up an amendment today, changing the threshold to 65 inches or some other number, that there would be an equal number of people in the audience upset about the fact that there was no data to support 65 inches as opposed to 36 inches. I think we need to go back in and actually look at how many trees are going to be impacted at 36 inches. What's the number? And not, and because I think that's because 48 inches was what most everybody had studied and had worked on. I sat on a housing affordability task force that was put together by the speaker and several other members of the state legislature dealing with affordability issues on houses. And I'm not talking about just the families at or below median family income, but housing costs across all spectrums. And as somebody who builds houses that some qualify for SDC waivers, but some are just above that spectrum, I think we're creating a system where those, I've heard some of you mention the missing middle housing, and I think we're creating a system now where the missing middle housing is getting really adversely impacted because we're exempting or we're going to work for the families at the lowest at the lowest wages. And quite frankly, the people building the McMansions, they're so affectionately termed, can afford to pay $10,000, $20,000 to remove a tree. But those of us who might be building a house at $300,000, $320,000 for, you know, the cop who lives in Portland can't. And so that's going to take that lot out of the inventory for somebody like me who wants to build that house. So it's not just the lowest levels that this is going to impact. It's everybody. I would also ask the council to, with the report that you received earlier, to look at some problems with the existing city code regulations. You've heard some of them. In regards to the fencing, I have some sites I've sent you guys examples on where we've had situations where saving the trees actually was harder to do than taking them out because it was harder to meet the regulations to save them. Matter of fact, we just had a lot that had 11 trees on them. We turned in to remove all 11 trees. I'm not intending to remove them. I'm going to design around the houses, but it's easier for me to pay the fee and say I'm going to remove the trees and then design the house around them without having to put the fences up and have the inspections and the arborists on site every time we do it. So it's actually easier for us to, on paper. So lastly, just as somebody who served on Title 11, I'd ask the council to consider that when we were trying to craft Title 11, it was we were all striving to come up with something that was easy. And we also were also trying to come up with something that didn't require an arborist on every project. That was specifically one of our goals. Unfortunately, I think we're going down a path that is going to require us right back to having an arborist on everything, every project to verify the size of the tree, the species of the tree, whether or not it needs to be saved or not, and we're getting away from what that. So I would ask the council to please consider the original proposal at 48 inches, and if 36 is the number that you ultimately end up on, ask the stakeholders that have worked on that to determine what the impacts to affordability are going to be and the tree canopy are going to be and come back with that as a later package. Thank you.
Justin, what proportion of the Fish construction homes are eligible for our system development charge exemptions?
Right now, we're about 50-50.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
The next three are Paul Grove, Carol McCarthy, and Marty Suchek.
Go ahead, Paul, while they're getting settled.
Sounds good. Mayor Hales, members of council, Paul Grove with the Portland Home Builders. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's amendment. It certainly impacts some of our members, as was previously testified to, and then also folks like Habitat and others that are in and around that range. It is a benefit. But at the end of the day, I would echo Justin's sentiments around that threshold figure and note that the impacts to housing affordability, and in particular those, if you're looking at along the spectrum, that are within that middle range and just above the SDC waiver threshold, we're looking at the impacts to the middle class, to workforce housing at a time when, frankly, we should be doing what we can in our power to protect and grow workforce-related housing. And I think, moving forward, the initial stopgap measure, again, was contemplated under the notion of these large trees, and the advisory bodies that looked and discussed at this worked its way through a process that initially landed at that 48-inch threshold. And I think that threshold is much more reflective of the discussions that had led up to the initial proposal that was before council, and I think is much more indicative and reflective of the genesis of the issue from the November timeframe. So I think it's something that these costs get either passed on to the ultimate home buyer at the end of the day, or make development potentially prohibitive on certain lots. And I think we have to be mindful of that middle portion of the spectrum when we're looking at these proposals, and understand that this impact, taken in concert, has cumulative effects to housing affordability, and something that we certainly have to be mindful of at the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Carol McCarthy. I live at 4311 Southwest Freeman Street, and I'm testifying today as the chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. So the Multnomah Neighborhood Association adopted a position in January supporting the Audubon Society's proposed reforms to Title 11. In addition, we requested that the exemption from the tree code provisions for development lots under 5,000 square feet be removed. I have copies of my letter that I forgot to hand out. Our letter to you promoting our support of the Audubon Society's reforms and removal of the exemption for development lots smaller than 5,000 square feet was endorsed by Sweeney, the coalition of 17 Southwest neighborhoods. Today I want to focus on the importance of removing the exemption from the tree code protections to trees on development lots under 5,000 square feet. This exemption removes protections to trees on most of the infill development lots in our neighborhood. These lots may be clear cut. This type of infill typically removes an affordable house from a large lot, and then it is split into two lots, where two large houses at about twice the price are constructed. These houses are often inhabited by two people each, or four people total, when for decades families with that many or more people have lived on that larger lot. In many cases, there's little or no increase in density with this type of infill. The trees are removed, and with them, we lose all the benefits that we've heard about today to air, water quality, noise reduction, wildlife habitat, and neighborhood aesthetics. And this is not a good bargain. It is distressing our residents who strongly identify with our neighborhood trees. We do not have the financial resources or the good fortune of knowing South Park heroes to save trees that are as noble as the Eastmoreland giant sequoias. We are relying on you to equitably preserve trees in our less affluent side of the river. And then just listening to all the testimony here today, I guess I'd now like to speak as myself, that if the process doesn't allow you to remove the exemption of 5,000 square foot lots, that you immediately impose a moratorium on cutting down trees of 36 inches at breast height until the new amendments can be considered. Because right now, every day we're seeing, well, as Marty will testify, large trees being cut down. And they take so long to replace, 100 years. So it's too fast to cut them down now, Thank you.
Thanks very much. Marty, welcome.
Marty Suchek, 7005 Southwest 34th, 97219.
We don't need your address anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, can I have those minutes back then in a second?
You bet. Go ahead.
A couple seconds. I haven't been here for a while. I think I was. I'm here to tell you about a specific thing, and I was going to say all the things that have been said to you many times about the value of trees, their enormous benefits, et cetera. And I heard a lot of stuff here that's put it much better than I could by the tree code people, the implementation people, the tree code committee people, and the remodelers made a lot of sense to me, especially the guy where the tree is in the back. And I remodeled 10 years ago I have a tree very close to that, but, you know, I wouldn't want that. So I would encourage you to consider that. And I also want to say about the middle trees, the 36-inch trees, the 48-inch trees, how old are your kids? The kids now who are 7 and 8 who are in middle school, are they going to not grow up with trees the way we've had them if you reduce that? You know, I mean, if you increase the low threshold, we're going to have large trees and little trees planted by the Friends of Trees. That's not good. You know, we need to do something to protect that. And because of what I've seen in my neighborhood, I don't think it's all that costly. In our neighborhood, there is a giant specimen of a Deodara cedar. This picture is in my written testimony. It's coming down on or after April 5th. An old man, the people that brought it from England, and was planted in the early 1900s probably. It's got two trunks. It is almost 80 inches in diameter. The developer reported that it was 41 inches in diameter, which would have been a middle-sized tree that could go down, you know. The old man sold the tree when he was assured, sold the property when he was assured it'd be okay for $185,000. When you buy a property in the 1900s for $28,000, you think you're getting a big profit, maybe. In less than 3 weeks, it was sold to a developer for $450,000, less than 3 weeks. This is a predatory situation we find is occurring more and more in our neighborhoods, just not our neighborhood, but around, where people don't have family watching out for them. I like the tree code. I like to say what Carol did, 5,000 square feet should not be exempted because large trees do not know they are on 5,000 square feet. They give their benefits no matter the size of the lot. They're just like salmon. They don't know when they're crossing the urban growth boundary. So we've got to find a way to use imagination in order to put these houses on trees. We're not getting density in our neighborhood. What we're getting, as Carol said, we're getting the removal of modest houses that need energy upgrading, that have well-established gardens or well-established habitat for pollinators or gardens for people to grow their own food. So I'm asking you to exempt the exemption. Take the 5,000 square foot exemption off. Where it is, you say, two commissioners say that because our policy in the city is density, we have to do this, but they're not head-on trade-offs. We can get density in ways and places that don't require us to cut down trees, even the 36-inch ones. You know, and I would ask you that for the future of the children of this neighborhood and this region. Oh, the developer told us that Portland is the only place where they can do this, and they're taking advantage of it. He's a businessman. He's taking advantage of it, and we don't quibble with that. We quibble with the fact that Portland is the only area where you can do this kind of destruction.
Marty, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Would you do me a favor after you finish testifying? Would you, on a piece of paper, write the name of the seller and the address of this property?
Well, I don't know the gentleman's name, but I can get it for you. And
whatever you have, if you could give me preliminarily, I have your contact information.
Yeah.
And you've raised another issue in your statement to us that may be of interest to the Attorney General Elder Fraud Unit. And the numbers are so striking, I want to just make sure that we don't overlook that as well.
Okay, thank you very much,
Commissioner.
Thank you
for bringing that to our attention.
Elder Fraud?
Yeah, there's an Elder Fraud Unit.
If you give me the... just some contact information, I'll follow up with you.
Okay. May I email that to your office, or do you want it? Now I can give you the... Okay, I'll email.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you all very much.
Okay. The last two people I show signed up are Linda Robinson and Sarah Long.
Welcome, Linda. So I'm Linda Robinson from East Portland. I feel at a little bit of a disadvantage testifying about the amendment because the amendment's different than what I thought it was when I prepared to testify. I haven't read it. I don't know. It sounds quite complicated. I do want to say that I have some real concerns about exempting